Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Ben, for your introduction and inviting Aegis to moderate this panel 9. With the title Sustainability Solutions in Action. I see Georgina is already here. That is fantastic. I'm happy, you know, we have event organizers, brand owners, governmental bodies, suppliers, all addressing actually sustainability and underlying their ambition with policies, guides, and new approaches to improve sustainability at all levels, not only environmental, but social and governmental issues. So one can say there is a shift towards sustainability in the event sector. There's no longer a question about why, but how to do it. So it will be interesting to hear what the panelists tell us about the how exactly to implement or experience sustainability in their events or business environment. It's a great privilege to have this panel with industry professionals. So let me briefly introduce them. I will start with Georgina, you see on the screen over there. She is joining remote. She's the director of environmental excellence for Paris 2024, organizing committee for the Olympic and Paralympic Games. We have David in the center, you know already. He is actually replacing Arlette Anderson at short notice, so thank you for jumping in, David. He is the head of sales for Agreco, as you know him. We have David Stubbs here on my side. He is an independent sustainability expert with an impressive background in the event sector. He is also a long-time expert on sustainability for our Association of Global Event Suppliers. And last but not least, we have Richard Bate on the left side. He is the Chief Safety and Sustainability Officer of the E-Bike Grand Prix and Cube International, who brings game-changing concepts to sports event, sports retail, and modular building industry. So that's for the intro. Let's start with Georgina. You're hearing me. I know you'd probably like to give, as the other speakers also, a little intro, just a little background about, you know, who you are and what your current activity is. Is that correct?
Sure, with pleasure. First of all, thank you for the invitation and also for the flexibility to do this at a distance. It's a great honor and privilege to be with you today. So, as you said, I'm director of environmental excellence. That may, ask some questions for some people. It's like, is that sustainability? What do you really mean? So let me start by explaining actually how we decided to organize sustainability within Paris 2024. It's out of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. I am responsible for checking all the environmental. So that's about roughly 13 of them. So a strong focus on climate. As you may know, we're the first games aligned with the Paris Agreement. So reducing our emissions by 50% and then offsetting everything we could not avoid or reduce. Then an objective on circular economy. A focus as well on protecting biodiversity and on resilience. All that apply to all the different things we do to deliver the games, that is, the energy we consume or we try to save, the infrastructures we build or the ones we actually try not to build, and this is part of our major climate impact reduction, transportation as well, and then food, with very strong focus as well on the data and all the digital parts, and of course on the merchandising, the products that are sold under our license. So, maybe a long explanation, but so that you know how we are organized within Paris 2024 to deal with these issues. In parallel, there are other teams working on the social, particularly on getting the social economy very active. We have today more than 250 contracts signed and operational with the social economy already. So I'll be glad to talk that in another forum. Thank you.
Thank you, Georgina, for the intro. I'll move on to David. Actually, I see it must be David's day. You know, we had David before and two Davids here on the panel. So, okay. No, but your little intro, David.
Okay, thank you. It is a real day of Davids. We should have a full panel of us. So actually picking up from Georgina, I was head of sustainability at London 2012, so 12 years before I was like her predecessor. But I'm trained as an ecologist, and I've spent best part of three decades working in the sports sector in particular, but also other types of events, looking at the environmental and wider sustainability issues. And since London 2012, I've been an independent advisor, doing a lot of work through the International Olympic Committee, helping successor organising committees such as Rio 2016, Tokyo 2020, and working closely through them with Paris, Los Angeles, and in due course Brisbane, but also many other different sports and events from World Economic Forum through to Premier League in my country.
Thank you. That's great. Move to this second and last, David.
David, to make it easy. So yes, hello again. Just want to mention also that I'm also a board member of Aegis, so I will a bit try to talk for all the suppliers in Aegis and what we do around sustainability. So yeah, coming back to Agrico, we decided, like Georgina already said, also 5 years ago to follow the Paris agreements, and we are working very hard on our own operations. Like mentioned yesterday, started here in Dumbarton, scope 1 and 2, net zero by 2030. And then we have made a commitment by 2030 to reduce 50% of the fossil fuel of our clients, which being a generator company is quite ambitious. We have started here in the UK already to ban normal diesel, so all our clients can only choose traceable HVO fuel. So really, really big focus for us.
Thank you. And then Richard?
Good morning. Unusually, not a David. Before I came in this morning, I thought, I'll just check up. When did I actually start in the events industry? And sadly, it was 1981, the World Canoe Championship. So I've been around this business for a long time, and I've seen the progressive change, and I've seen the very dramatic change as sustainability has become part of the day-to-day vocabulary. You can imagine over 40 years what I've done, but predominantly in sport, a lot of motorsport. I've worked in offshore renewables, but my journey into sustainability probably started with MHI Vestas, working offshore out of Aarhus in Denmark, and then the last 8 years with Formula E. And initially, my focus in Formula E was around battery technology, battery safety, but then working with the team, you know, people like Julia Pallet have educated me, and now I've become really passionate about sustainability. I left Formula E 3 months ago, and I now find myself with this incredible business that is Cube International, that is events, you know, owns its own events, is a rights holder, is a supplier, you know, licensing. It's just an incredible organization to be part of. And what's been great for me is that it's a blank sheet. I'm pretty much focusing on the modular part of the business and on the e-bike racing series. And we have a great leadership team. I won't say they give me free hand to do what I want. And one of my fellow directors is here, Judith, keeping an eye on me. But what we've been able to do, which I think many others have not been able to do, is that because we're pretty much starting from a blank sheet of paper, we've been able to use best practice from health and safety, which is my background, and we've been able to design out some of the risk from the outset. So, you know, when we talk about modular, hopefully later, I'll perhaps explain that a little bit further.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, everybody, for the intro and the background. What you said, Richard, is just leading me for the first question, maybe for David. You know, we are seeing that many event organizers or right holders emphasizing on sustainability. And how do you see the move from strategy, from thinking, into action?
Great. Well, thank you. So, yes, there's a lot more organisations now which are publishing sustainability strategies, and we're seeing a lot of communication about the subject. But it's no good just congratulating ourselves because we have a policy. We've really got to implement it. And one of the key areas around this is the way you organise sustainability within your structure, whether you are a rights holder or a venue, a national federation or whatever it might be. It's about your governance. It's about how you make decisions and key areas around, for example, sustainable sourcing. Everything you buy is something you control because it's your budgets. So let's look at how you integrate sustainability within the procurement process. It's about things like staff training and education, making sure that everyone understands their role in delivering the strategy. And looking at things like how you're investing your funds and how decisions are made. Is sustainability properly built into that? So there's a lot of areas like that which are fundamental to making it work. Because, you know, if you have a plan but you don't have the sort of the drive, the leadership and the processes and management systems, it can be very hard to implement things. Otherwise, it's just a few ad hoc things.
Je suis en conférence, je suis en live. Désolé.
And Aaron Georgina will also explain, no doubt, how the importance of the very beginning of an event planning process of making sure that sustainability is built properly into your structure so that it isn't just some vague aspiration, but it's tangibly locked into the ways of working of the organisation.
Thank you. Thank you, David, for that. This brings me to Paris. I know that sustainability has been on the top of the agenda for Paris since the very beginning. So, Georgina, you mentioned about meals earlier in your intro, and I learned that Paris is going to prepare 13 million meals. How does sustainability buy into that?
Yes, you know, 13 million meals is what we have to deliver for the Games, the Olympic and the Paralympics. So it's a challenge, you know, and it all started very early. I think what David was saying is key. You know, if you want sustainability to work, it has to be embedded in the processes, right? And this was one of the first things we did with our sustainable sourcing code, you know, was to put that in place, because then that managed to, you know, go into all the different areas. So we started with that, and then we focalized on food because of the huge challenge of delivering so many meals in such a short period of time. You know, from an organizational perspective, it's complex. From a logistics perspective, it's very complex as well. So it was, you know, the key question we asked ourselves is, what is the most sustainable meal service we could come up with in summertime, in France, in 2024? That was the question. It took us almost 2 years to answer that question. So you can imagine the amount of work that was put into that. 2 years in which we have consulted the entire supply chain, so going from agriculture to all the way to the metanizers, you know, the ones that will deal with our waste, with our organic waste. So all that was put together in the food vision of the Games, which was highly inspired in what David had done in London in 2012. Thank God that was there. And then, you know, we had to adapt it and move it forward towards the best possible meal set in 2024. That has allowed us to make very strong commitments onto the quality of the meals that are going to be served. For example, on average, the meals of the Games will have a carbon weight that is half of what an average French meal is. So there's a strong work, you know, both top-down and bottom-up, to come up with such a commitment. And you're going to say, well, okay, fine, how are you going to do that? It's just a statement, or you're actually going to do it? Well, the answer is we are going to do it, because we are increasing significantly the portion of plant-based meals. We're also sourcing more locally, with 80% of our ingredients sourced in France. And the 20% that we cannot source in France is simply because they don't exist. They're not done in France. And yet, for example, athletes ask for it, and we have to respond to that very specific request from the IOC and the federations. Second, we will be reducing significantly the single-use plastic in the meal services. And this, you know, some of you may have seen Coca-Cola, our partner, has committed publicly to reduce 50% single-use plastic in the beverages as well. So this is a major move to, you know, compared to any normal operations in an event of this size. We're also working on reducing waste, you know, food waste, and of course, re-employing all the equipment, you know, making sure our suppliers are engaged in a second life operation for everything that all the ustensils, for example, that are going to be used. So all that put together allows us to say that our meals are going to have a carbon footprint, a carbon weight that is half of that of an average meal. You know, important commitments. There are five other main commitments, you know, around, for example, the inclusion as well. So 10% of the jobs should be people that are getting a job when they were away from jobs. You know, so this is putting also incentives into our suppliers and sponsors to create new jobs and train and form people into what should be sustainable jobs.
Thank you, Georgina. Well, that's an impressive and comprehensive ambition and plan you just showed. I wondered, you know, if we go to Richard, you know, with your e-bike Grand Prix, which is a global tour, with the challenges a global tour, you know, takes with it. So you say that measurable and tangible commitments are expected from the host cities, you know, relative to sustainability and sustainability mobility, you know. How do you ensure that these host cities are really living up to that?
That's a really good question. Let's take a few, it's okay, small step back. We're a very, very new championship, completely different concept, putting world-class athletes onto e-bikes. You don't necessarily need to be a cyclist. As long as you're a world-class athlete, you'll be able to perform on these machines. But the whole concept around host city, which I work really closely with Judith on, is not for us to arrive in a city, deliver the event, and move on. From the outset, we have designed in an engagement with the host city. So we will, from the point where we know that we're going to race in a city, we will engage with that city, we will ask them what they are delivering, what their sustainability aims are, and we won't come in and try to deliver ours on top, we'll work alongside. That we will offer training, we will expect some things from the host cities, we will expect the host city in the week preceding our event to put on some showcases, to engage with us on cycling activity, and to show that there is diversity. And you know, it could be that we put on a large-scale cycling event for families. But we will also support the host city with education. We work with a training partner, so we will also offer that city training if they ask us for it. The other part that we require from our host cities is that we want to know, I'm not going to use the word legacy because that's often too used. I've been using the word heritage. But we want to know what the host city's medium, short, and long-term plan is to engage with us around micromobility. The whole point of our series, it's an e-bicycle. And taking some statistics from our colleagues at Deloitte, the exponential growth in sales of e-bikes, 17 to 18% globally annually. And by 2030, the European Association of Car Manufacturers expects a drop in car sales by up to 20%, and that void will be filled by e-bikes and scooters. So we are promoting micromobility as part of our series. That's what we're trying to engage with host cities and show that we're doing something different. The other key thing about our championship and the real passion I have, it's inclusive and it's diverse. Our director of sporting is working on a project to create an equivalency calculation. So within 2 years, we will have males and females racing against each other in real time. And there's absolutely no reason why, with some adaptions, certain disabled athletes shouldn't be able to race. So we could have men, women, disabled athletes racing together real time with just slight changes in the equivalency on the machine. I think that's a fantastic objective. And we're already in discussions with the IOC. If we can prove our concept, you never know, perhaps in 8 years' time, we may be an Olympic sport.
Thank you, Richard. Well, it's a good example for inclusion in the sport. Another perspective, the perspective of the supplier and the supply chain, a question for David. You know, can you explain a little bit how do you encourage sustainability within the company? You're a global company on different continents. How do you encourage that becomes the DNA of your company?
So, as I said, I think Agrico, I think it's a fact that Agrico changed 5 years ago. And I believe with everything is happening in the world, it was very naturally that there is no choice anymore. And the company has always had a DNA of keeping the finger on the pulse. So the change was done very rapidly. That is not so much... internally, that was not so much the challenge. The challenge is obviously to then implement that with your customers when you say that you're going to try to reduce 50% of their use of fossil fuel. There is an economic impact on that, first of all, because they are replacing fossil fuel by a biodiesel has a cost impact. So that's the first thing you need already to try to sell. But to be very honest, in general, because like Agrico is operating in all different sectors, like the petrochemicals, or every business has approximately now a sustainability strategy. So I think the world is there, approximately, in general, to try to do it better. What we see in events mostly is that it works in two rhythms: the repetitive events, like the festivals, the touring accounts like Formula One, Formula E, CLGP, to name a few. Because they are repetitive, they can go at a faster rhythm than what we call the one-offs, being the Olympics or the World Cups or the big events. And we see a drive of the repetitive accounts which are looking for solutions. But it's obviously easier when you're on the same place or you're on the same circuit every year to advance much more rapidly to a much more sustainable event. For us, in our portfolio, the prize goes to SailGP. What Fiona Morgan is doing with her team is pushing us so hard, and we are doing fantastic things, but they are taking risks, and they're also ready to go economical more further than what others are doing. So I think for us, the prize this year is SailGP. Now, yesterday, Birmingham put a sustainability report out. This is also something new we see. It's not only about doing it, but then there is also a report. And then I read the report, and what is good is that, for example, Birmingham said for energy, yeah, they should have allocated more budget, because the problem is when you innovate, And I think that's for everybody who has a business. New products are costing more money. The supply chain is still very fragile. And your customers must be ready to make that investment. So Birmingham said very clear. We did a lot of good things. I think it's the first games where on every venue we had something of new technology providing green energy. But it has a financial impact.
Can I just
Thank
add
you.
Something on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yes, please do.
Because we say it's really important that the market suppliers themselves can't just anticipate what's going to come down the road. If the rights holders, the organisers and so on, they need to show a clear route map that this is what they're intending to do. If you give a signal to the market early enough, then they can prepare for when the tenders actually come out. And that's something I knew we did, like with the Food Vision in London 2012. We produced that about 3 years before the Games. We had dialogue with the industry, with all the different caterers, with the distributors and so on, to make sure they knew that we were wanting to be sourcing food from all these different sustainability criteria, and that allowed them to prepare. So that was more cost effective for us because they weren't having to suddenly change at the last minute. And whereas energy, food, logistics, all the different overlay materials, you've got to make a clear signal early enough to the market that this is the way you're going.
And if I, just me, just one, Georgina said 20% still,
I come back to you, Georgina.
20% that I cannot make happen is coming from the stakeholders saying the athletes, I want that, which cannot be produced in France. For the ones who were sharp yesterday during the technology session, the person from Deloitte said, I have this dream that we will not have any broadcast cabling anymore and the metaverse, this and that. And Yannis from OBS very quickly at the end said, yeah, there is only one thing. It will all need more power. So it's you know.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Georgina, I hope you heard what we said here, and and I wonder, you know, the question about the suppliers, the vendors being ready, being prepared to buy in the concept. Can you tell us a little bit how that works for Paris?
Well, it's very important. It's exactly what David said. You know, you have to work very early on to start preparing the markets for what you want, because in a sense, you do tender for things that will be delivered in 2024. So somehow you have to be ahead of the head of the game, right? And suppliers are not necessarily there. So it takes a lot of time and discussions to get sometimes people on board. In some cases, actually, our suppliers are part of the solution, and they love it because this is a way for them to show what they are capable of doing, and will be a way, you know, for us in 2024 to show what they can do as best. So it's also, if you allow me for the expression, a marketing concept, you know, and this is something we work with them. Then, so on one hand, there's the opportunity. On the other hand, is the complexity of having access to the amount of quality goods and services, you know, at the volume we need for the games. So, which sometimes is important. So, for example, coming back to food, I said we have six main engagements and then commitments, and then we have 60 detailed commitments on how we want to buy chicken, how we want to buy vegetables, how we want to buy so that the market can be aware of both the quality and the quantities that we will need. We are holding discussions as we speak as well with the Ministry of Agriculture, with all the different public entities, both in the cities, in the territories, and in the state, so at all the different scale levels, so that these volumes of the games will serve as well as a vehicle for communicating around more sustainable, you know, food servicing. So again, the challenges can go well beyond the games, but more to use the games as an accelerator for a transformation also in the food sector.
Yes, thank you, Georgina. Well, I would like to close that, you know, engagement with the supply, with the sustainability, with Richard. I mean, within your company, very diverse company, different engagements. Can you tell us a little bit about how you prepare yourselves to the new challenges to be ready to offer sustainable solutions to the market?
Yeah, so I think probably for this I'll focus on the modular structures side of the business. And again, Cube is not an old company. A lot of the concepts within Cube are very, very new. The concept around the modular structures, from the outset, the intention was, the focus was on logistics. If you do a direct comparison with our competitors, with a standard 38-ton truck, most of our competitors will deliver two cabins on one truck. Depending on the format of the truck, we can deliver 22 cabins on a single truck. So, I mean, you don't have to be, you know, brilliant at maths to work that one out. But what it And it's not just in the fact that the carbon footprint of the logistics operation. It began because of the way we operate as a business. Our supply chains are relatively short. So we engage with the manufacturer from the outset. We understand the challenges that the manufacturer faces. I wanted to have more recycled steel in the structures. I very quickly realized from an engineering perspective, 40% is about where we were going to be. Then I also wanted to understand the other materials in the structure, and we found a compromise. But what we did is we set an objective, we worked towards that objective. When we couldn't meet those objectives, we were honest. We said, we can't do this. And we have been very, very honest in our reporting, and I think that's something that I'm really passionate about. It's great setting objectives and then report it, but you need to be honest when you report on those objectives. So from the point of view of concept, design, manufacturer, logistics, it's an integrated process. And I am very, very aware that this is a lucky position to be in, because I've been part of that process from concept. But the next phase for us was, okay, we can do all of this up to the point of the trucking company. Then we started to ask questions about our transport company. We weren't satisfied. The data that was coming back, I felt, was cut and paste. And because of the nature of Cube and our quite inspirational chairman, we've now bought into the trucking company. And that's my control measure. My control measure is to have a much deeper understanding of of how the logistics works. By buying into the company. The next phase for us will be is to understand better the operation. So we build 200-bed temporary hotels. The bit that's missing from our concept at the moment is the detailed data coming back on the operation of the structure after we've handed over. So there's a piece missing from our jigsaw, but we will close that out in the next few months.
Thank you. Thank you for that insight. We were, talking a lot about climate change. There is a COP just in Sharm el-Sheikh finished up. And it brings me to a question to you, David, about biodiversity and how that affects or impacts the event industry, if at all.
Right. Well, it is a very, very relevant topic these days. And alongside the climate crisis, we are seeing globally, masses of loss of biodiversity, and there will be a COP, it's COP 15 on the Convention on Biodiversity happening next year, I think. I think it's in Canada, but it's a subject of growing international importance. And the event sector is an area where there's a lot we can do. Now, we heard this morning from Tim Brearcliffe and the horticultural expos, but it's not just for those types of things. Every type of event, whether it's a festival, sports event, or whatever, can do something to help support biodiversity. And lots of events happen in urban areas, and creating better quality green space in urban areas is a vital part of the quality of life for people who live there. So the connection between a healthy city and the types of events that are coming is really critical. So even if it's in a very small space, even an indoor sports venue, you've still got the outer face. It might be landscaping around a car park, it might be some roof gardens or green walls, sustainable drainage systems. There's many different sort of practical ways in which any type of venue can do something that favours biodiversity, and that in turn can help improve air quality and create green space for sort of recreation. Even mental health is a great benefit from having good quality green space in cities. So it's a vital part of looking at sport and the wider events sector. If you're a city wanting to attract events, the better quality environment you have, the better for it. Those who are managing sports grounds, there's a lot of work you can do to improve the sort of ecological quality of the sites you're on. And these green horticultural sites that AIPH do, to me they're like Olympic parks without the sports venues. And having quality natural environment around the venues is something that really adds to the experience. And we talk nowadays a lot about event experience, whether it's in music or sport or whatever. And a having attention to the detail of the natural environment in the, in the setting of where these take place is a vital part of that experience. So in all respects, it's a really critical topic.
Thank you. Thank you, David. I've been informed to have we have 5 minutes more, so I want to give the opportunity for the audience maybe to address a question to Paris or the panelists here in the room. Are there any questions? Don't be shy. There is one here on the top.
Always one at the back.
Always on the back.
Hi there, my name's Treve Evans. I'm from AIPH, the International Association of Horticultural Producers. You'll have heard Tim speak earlier about our exhibitions. We've talked about suppliers, but another important aspect, of course, is the sponsorships and partnerships. And what I'd like to ask, we have obviously a nice diverse panel here, who are consultants, suppliers, rights holders, and a host city. So what should a host city or rights holder look for in a partner? And also, what can a partner bring to an event?
Thank you, Tree, for that. Who's would like to answer? Georgina, maybe?
I could at least start an answer. I think everyone could complete. Well, first of all, what the sponsor can bring? Solutions. They can bring solutions. You know, events can be great opportunities to showcase the best of what they know how to do. In our case, we try to work with them so as to develop the new solutions that we need, you know, because if you say, you know, you want to do things differently, that means that you can just not put out a tender and get the solutions, right? Many times you have to work them with them. So this is what we're doing. So, you know, the first thing they should bring is solutions.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Could I add on to that one?
Yeah, sure.
So there's two sides to this. One is commercial partners are increasingly looking at the sustainability risk of events and sports that they might support. So if you don't have a coherent sustainability plan and evidence that you're going down this road, you can lose sponsorship opportunities. That's where we're seeing that a lot. And on the other side, there's also a risk to the rights holder of getting the wrong sponsor and undermining their sustainability credentials. And we did see a little example of that with British Cycling recently when they did a big partnership with Shell and they got absolute heap of opprobrium for the sort of the disconnect there. And there's many other examples like that. So the link between commercial sponsors and sustainability is really vital. Get it right and it's value add. Get it wrong and you've got a reputational issue.
Yeah, you're certainly right. There needs to be a match and common objectives. Any last question, maybe? Yes, we take Ian.
Hi guys. Ian Edmondson, at Legacy Delivery. I'm moderating a panel shortly on related topics. But my question is, you talked about the vision for, you know, signalling to the market, you know, the intention over time. If you're not a big event, you know, like the Olympic Games, you don't have the resources to make these choices about, you know, financial consequences. What's your view about the steps that you should take? You know, where do you go to sort of have guidance on steps you should take? And I'm aware of, you know, things like the French Ministry of Sport and WWF 15 pledges on sustainability, for example. There's the UNSFCC, the Sport for Climate Action Group, and things like that. What's your view on where's the guidance about where people can tangibly show they're making progress on things?
I can take that if you want, as well. In relation to the games, we wanted to make it accessible for example, the cities, and this is the myriad of cities that will be organizing things related to the games. And this is why we created guidelines that are on our website, and that anybody who's organizing something around the Olympic and Paralympic Games, if they want, they could just go through the checklist, get the ADS, you know, and get that, you know, the life easier, even if they don't have sustainability experts within their teams. So we, the reason why we developed these guidelines is simply because we couldn't find one that is linked to events in the way we wanted it. So this is why we did it for our events. As you say, smaller events not necessarily have the power or the time or the resources to do that, but I think it's important that both the public aspects, like you said, the ministry or some organizations like WWF, they are taking this into account. It's uncertain to me how that is working in other countries, though. Hence, what sustainable energy, what Sports for Climate Action has done, it's been great because it's been global.
On the topic of guidelines, then, there's actually a lot of material out there. The hard bit is perhaps knowing where to find it, and you're right, quite right there. But AGES itself has recently produced a sustainability guide for its members, so that's helping all the different types of suppliers get involved in this subject. If you go to the International Olympic Committee's website, their sustainability page, they have a series of documents under the series Sustainability Essentials, and they are simple introductory guides to various topics which are relevant for the whole Olympic family of national Olympic committees, international federations, and in fact, cascading through that to any sports organisation. These sorts of guides are very relevant and helpful. So, in SailGP you mentioned, but the their sponsor 11th Hour Racing has developed a toolkit which helps different event organisers of any type start on this journey and measure and capture things, and understanding what to measure it and what to make of the data is a big topic for another day perhaps, but there is a vast and growing library of support and information out there.
Thank you, David. Well, this leads me to the end. I would like to thank you, Georgina, both David and Richard, for this input. So a warm round of applause.